Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Mike, and I'm here with my brother Dan.
Hello.
It helps not to know him. And we are talking season one, episode four of The West Wing. This is called Five Votes Down. Let's pull some big ideas off the small screen. This is Rerun Retrospect. Well, again, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us for this Rerun Retrospect episode, talking about what I think is going to be a pretty good episode of The West Wing. Again, this is season one, episode four. It's titled Five Votes Down. It originally aired on the 13th of October, 1999, written by Aaron Sorkin and directed by Michael Lehman. Our first segment is State of the Union. We'll either give a little context and talk about something that was happening when the series originally aired, and we give a recap of the episode. So we really don't have any kind of context. We've kind of used up a lot of that here in our first few episodes, but I am going to give you a recap reading directly from the synopsis given on the IMDb website for this episode. This was written by Meebly. It says, when an admittedly weak gun control bill the White House has been backing turns out to be five votes short of House passage, Josh makes deals and threats to several Democratic reps, while Leo appeals to Hoynes for help. Elsewhere, while working the bill, Leo misses his anniversary, which he tries in vain to atone for, but eventually his wife Jenny decides to leave him. This episode had a lot going on. Dan, why don't you slide us into the filibuster?
All right, so the filibuster is where we talk about the episode. And I wanted to start out right when the episode opened and you have the president on pulpit, so to speak. He's out there, he's talking, he's got the crowd cheering. I was convinced at first it was a flashback to the campaign and they were going to talk about how he became president.
Oh, really?
It didn't last long. I mean, right. They proved it not to be that very quickly. I just thought that that's what was going on because I wonder if that story is ever going to be told. But who knows? Here we are on the fourth episode, and really he's just talking to a crowd, pumping up this gun bill, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Even on my first watch, I can't say that I thought that this was a flashback. I do remember early on, the timing of this seems weird. It always seems weird that we started the series with being a full year into a term. So I can see how you'd make that jump. It'll be interesting to see if they do any backtracking and go back and give us like the origin story of how all this started. Because I think that would be interesting.
And on a funny note, I did have this thought because now watching on HBO Max, I did actually watch the whole intro and it made me laugh a little bit because it seems like the end of a movie where, you know, they have the music and they tell you how the character died. You know, like, because it has them moving around in color and then it fades into black and white and a frozen picture. And right. I'm just waiting for something at the bottom, like, you know, like died in a car accident or something like that, you know?
Right.
It just made me laugh when I had that thought. I was like, oh, right. This intro, I need to pay more attention to it.
We got more of the same on this. I mean, literally the opening scene, once the speech is over, that long walk and talk. This was actually the longest walk and talk they've had. And they go all the way from the ballroom, through the kitchen, through like the laundry.
They're showing the path, how they get the president out of that area. Yeah.
And it literally pretty much has like all of the main characters of the show are a part of that walk and talk. It took them 13 takes and, you know, again, it involved absolutely everybody. And this, the level of coordination, I know Rob Lowe is quoted as saying that the Steadicam operator who's having to walk full speed backwards for all of these takes for that whole entire scene, he almost passed out due to exhaustion. The one thing that kind of jumps at me about this scene in particular is, especially at the end, once they get to the motorcade, this is like the second time, or maybe it might even be the third, but they're trying to promote Joshua Lyman as this, you know, celebrity that has these fans that go crazy, almost like teenagers go crazy for the Beatles. And all that kind of stuff. That kind of jumps at me. I'm like, are there really political groupies? I mean, is this like really a thing? You know, I mean, obviously I know people get excited about the specific candidates and all that kind of stuff and whatever, but I don't know. This was just a, I just remember feeling like it's a little out of place. Like the deputy chief of staff is going to have like people like, oh, he's dreamy. And
right. I'm sure they're overselling it for entertainment. But remember when Josh, when we're introduced to him, what he said was controversial. But I'm sure you had a lot of people who would have watched that in this fictional universe and been like, you know what? I really like what he said, even though I know it doesn't play well. So maybe I like that little aspect. I mean, I'm a Josh fan, so.
Sure.
I'm out there in the crowd screaming, hi.
I'm turning on Josh. I didn't like him early on. This episode is continuing that, and we'll kind of talk about how they're developing the characters here. But I guess I agree with you that, you know, he's going to be on Face the Nation and Capitol Beat and all these things, and he's going to have people who detest him and people who, I mean, that's just the nature of politics. It's this specific Team Beat. Because how old do you think Josh is? I mean, if we go through, right? If we go through the cast, I would tell you that Rob Lowe's character feels to me like he's early 30s. Mandy would seem like she's probably early to mid 30s. And then everybody else is going to be late 30s.
I would guess she's even younger. I would guess like right at 30. Because she's like a political star. She's proved herself and she's doing stupid things like driving her BMW on the curb. And, you know, a mature woman doesn't do that stuff.
Okay, but where do you agree with me that Sam is in his early to mid 30s?
Early, yeah. Early.
Okay. And then I would say Josh is mid to late 30s.
Okay. Yeah. Hairline. Sure.
Okay. Mid to late 30s has people screaming, hey, Josh. Oh, we want to get your autograph at the deli. We love you so much. We're college students.
It's the DC life, Michael. We just don't know it.
I thought people got into the politics because they wanted to serve. And apparently there's other motivations to be in politics. I thought that was funny. I don't think it was bad. It's just they're really trying to push this narrative about the political celebrity that I agree with. There are people who are going to get excited about certain personalities that are on TV. I just don't know that it ever gets to the boy band way that they're trying to portray it specifically in this episode.
All right, that's fair enough.
But I will say this, Sam, I know you're not a Sam fan. Sam is, I feel like in this episode, he's continuing to kind of redeem himself. He had the big screw ups early on in the series, and now he's kind of showing that he has this in his interaction with Toby about internet stock that, you know, went through the roof. His interaction about how to handle the votes and everything, he's kind of showing the fact that he does have some competency. He does have some intelligence.
I still have written down here, Sam is still a screw-up.
Why is he a screw-up?
When he had that interaction with Toby, and he's still bringing up the call girl, he's like, I remember when you did the call girl, and he does give him the advice and says, you know, you're not in legal trouble, but yeah, this is a PR disaster.
Right.
I'm still looking at Sam like, Sam, can you let it go? And Toby, I will say this episode, too, has probably the most humor of the four that I've watched. Like the whole thing with Toby and the stock thing and how he's devastated by it and everyone's making fun of him and everyone's congratulating Sam. What were they congratulating him about? Like a smokers jacket or something?
Yeah.
So there's humor in this, but I don't see Sam redeeming himself right now for me.
All right, what about Toby? How are you feeling about Toby?
Well, in this episode, I mean, he's coming off as unappreciated because of what went on with the speech. He keeps mentioning the pages, and Sam apparently wrote two big paragraphs or something that were popular when the president was speaking.
Right.
But, I mean, Toby's a likable guy. I think he's a very likable character, and it continues in this episode.
Yeah, he's kind of leaning into the grumpy guy. But he's still kind of self-deprecating. But I guess I just appreciate that. I know he was a jerk to the stewardess, and you're never going to give him a break about that.
We all have bad days. He's not consistent like Sam is. We all have bad days. So that was his bad day, but he's pretty likable right now.
Sure. That blows me away. I would have never guessed that, you know, that here four episodes in, you'd be so anti-Sam. I will say this. This is the first episode that we don't get a steady diet of the president. I mean, obviously in the pilot, we only see him in like the last 15 minutes, but it was extremely memorable. But in this one, other than we get the speech in the beginning and we get the comedic relief that is him on the pain pills for his back, he's really kind of absent here. And we're really kind of, I like the fact that we're diving into characters that we haven't really driven, particularly Leo. I mean, they do a really big job. In fact, John Spencer was nominated for Best Support, had an Emmy nomination for Best Supporting Actor in a drama series for specifically for this episode. And I enjoyed that about this episode. I enjoyed just kind of really digging into Leo because he'd kind of been this authority figure, but one that we didn't know a ton about.
Right. I liked when Leo had the interaction with the congressman and the congressman said, "Don't tell me how to raise black men."
Yes.
That was powerful. You know, that was a great interaction. Here's Leo spitting out stats and it really means nothing to this congressman who's on principle not going to vote on this watered-down gun bill.
Right.
But I will say, and I have this in my notes, so let's go ahead and jump to it. The Jenny and Leo story is kind of weak to me.
Is weak?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I mean, he forgot the anniversary. I felt like you assume that they've been married for 20 years, but watching that, I'm like, have they just been married for 2 years? And she didn't know what this was going to entail when he's like the right-hand man to the president and there's right. big political stuff going on. She can't handle that, you know, he came home late one night. I mean, obviously, it's saying like this built up to this, but it seemed like, come on, this is the camel that broke the, or this is the straw that broke the camel's back. Let's be real here. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a good talking point. I didn't think it was a week in the storyline. I think it's going to be tough because they're using this to show us a little bit about Leo. And in doing so, his wife is just a complete unknown. It's debatable, right? I mean, some people are going to side with her and be like, you know, you still have to take care of things at home. But we really don't know her. She's this unknown entity. We just got introduced to her. First time we've seen her face. Maybe she's been referenced before, but having no context and for it to be with this level of conflict, I think that that's a very interesting line, right? For him to say, she goes, this is not more important than your marriage, and him to go, yes, right now, this is, as I'm doing this job, this is more important than my marriage. Those are big words. I mean, I think, you know, we talk about how well the dialogue is written in the show, and to me, that scene was one of the strongest because it's really driving home this controversial point that there are people who do have to have jobs where it's not just the person doing the job that it affects.
I'm going to get you back on track here. Don't you think she knew what she signed up for? I mean, that's just where I was watching that. And I agree with Leo. You know, it's not that it's more important than the marriage. It's like this shouldn't be an issue. We can retire in 4 years, whatever, and go off to the beach, you know, and enjoy our lives. But right now in that moment, priority had to be his work at that point. And I would think a spouse would have to side with the other spouse in that scenario. That's just where I was. I don't have any compassion for Jenny right now. I'll be honest.
Right. No. And I don't think we're meant to. I think it's a valid response to go, you know what? You know, you should have known this. It's not like they're newlyweds. It also speaks to the fact that I think the White House is just such a unique thing. Whatever he's done politically in the past, I don't think the pace of what they have to do was mimicked in all those other political adventures that he's been through. But my heart went out to Leo a little bit there because you feel like he's in a rock and a hard place. The forgetting of the anniversary, a little cliche, right? I mean, it seems like every sitcom or show that involves a marriage, at some point there's an episode where somebody forgets an anniversary. But it also, it was familiar. Also, the guy must be loaded because I mean, as many times as I've made a mistake in my marriage and needed to make things right, I've never thought I'm going to hire a violinist to be at the table. Well, I mean, that's just a different level of life that I'm just not used to being a part of.
All right, while we're still on Leo, what about his interaction with the vice president?
One of the better reveals of the episode, right?
Leo has the hesitation of even going to the vice president, and clearly they did a great job of painting that there's a history there that we are not privy to yet. And maybe Correct. We will find out some stuff, but obviously there's a lot there. So much that, number one, he doesn't want to go talk to him. But when he does, there's a moment where now you're starting to say, okay, the VP is an okay guy, right? He gets Leo ice water, although the woman comes back with regular water. I don't know if you noticed that. There was no ice in the water. That's what happens when you're VP. You know, they're just like, whatever, just give him water.
If you were the actual president, we'd give you ice, but no.
Right. in that moment you're liking the VP, but then the VP goes to the Texas congressman and he has that great line where he says, you know, because I'm going to be president one day and you're not. And then you're seeing, okay, that kind of, you know, dead set politician focused on one thing, not worried about anything else, right? So now you're not liking him again, or at least in the moment I was going, okay, I can't decide if the VP is going to be a positive, a negative, or just neutral because he's both.
Right.
As the show goes on, which is interesting.
Right. Complete commentary on the animal that is American politics. In the fact that there is so much stuff that is ambiguous that you're just like, I don't know if I like this or not. And I expected this, but I didn't expect that. They've done a good job in previous episodes of showing that there is this friction between the vice president and Leo specifically. I thought it was good to kind of bridge them, to provide a bridge for them together, showing that they share this, they share alcoholism. It's something that they both knew about each other. And they do kind of change your perception of the vice president with how concerned and open he is to having Leo come and be a part of his meeting and getting the help that he needs, and just trying to be compassionate through the news that he's splitting up with his wife.
All right. So, yeah, so there's definitely history there. The VP invites him to the meeting. Were you a little surprised that it ends with Leo going into the AA meeting? Because I'm still... You have that scene where everyone's mad at the VP for getting the credit for the bill passing, right?
Before we talk to that, I think the more important scene was almost when Josh goes to the VP. You got Hoynes and he's, you know, yes, I'm going to do this for y'all and don't worry about it. This is not going to be a problem. He strong arms the congressman to make sure that, you know, it all happens. But he also does it in a way that he gets all the credit. So then you find out, in the way that he deals with the congressman and in Josh's coming to him is almost like, you know, game recognizes game, and just living in that political world to always make sure that you're covering yourself. And even though Hoynes wanted to project, I'm doing this for the president, I'm doing this because it's what's right, Josh kind of realizes, make no mistake, he made sure that this was going to work out the best for him foremost, and we saw that in the press coverage and everything. You almost got a feeling like Josh was making sure that he was on the good side of the VP by going over and just saying, hey, I saw what you did there.
Okay, but let's talk about the end game there. You're talking about a VP who's in the first term with the president, and he gets a little spotlight. That's great, but what's the end game for the VP? I mean, he's obviously wants to be president. The best way for him to be president is to do two terms with the current president and then run for president. So I don't see, that's where the show kind of lost it a little bit for me. I don't see why there's this big divide between the VP and the president. And we've not seen the president have any interaction with the VP or say anything good or bad about him at all, right? I mean, he's not even in his realm of what's going on around in the world.
I want to be careful here because it is your first watch through. And I'll just say this, much like they did the foreshadowing to show us that Leo and Hoynes had friction, and they're revisiting it. We've seen the storyline of the call girl make it across multiple episodes. We've seen kind of the aggressiveness of Josh and kind of his cockiness. This has kind of been through multiple episodes. I think this show is showing us that it's not Law and Order SVU. Right? I mean, they're going to take storylines and they're going to show it in a serialized manner that goes over a couple episodes. And Sorkin does a really good job of foreshadowing. And I think we're seeing that. So I think all the things you're saying, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you every question or everything is going to be answered or not or whatever. It's not wrong to go, you know what? I'm wondering if they're not going to talk further about this in later episodes.
No, I'm sure they are. I just don't see how it makes a convincing story right now. After watching episode 4, I'm going, okay.
It's him putting himself in the best political light. And anytime you can give yourself political capital, whether it's saving the president's bad gun bill or whatever, then you do that. And it doesn't matter if you're trying to run in 3 years or trying to run in 7 years, you know, having that good press coverage is always a win. And to me, that's what motivated him. I'm going to step back a little bit, and I want to deal with the Josh scene where he talks to the congressman from Wisconsin and kind of bullies him and threatens him with...
The one where he tells his friends to leave the room?
No. That's the Chris Wick interaction. I'm talking about the one on the outside.
Yeah, they're outside, and he says, we're going to run somebody against you in a primary.
Right. And so this whole scene, it is very much Josh. The execution of the scene... grated on me a little bit. It felt just melodramatic, right? The line that is, President Bartlett's a good man. He has a good heart. He doesn't hold a grudge. That's what he pays me for. As he throws his sunglasses on and walks
right.
away.
Right, no, I was about to say that. Yeah, he throws his sunglasses
it
on.
Just, it
it's
just
like,
reeks
this was made in the 80s, not 1999. Right.
It reminds me of, I don't know what it is with receding hairline redhead men and their use of sunglasses to make things dramatic, but this scene reminds me so much of like every opening to CSI Miami, where the guy pulls his sunglasses off and goes, it's murder. It's just like, it's a little bit overdone. I don't think, it's not a complete violation because I guess this is how Josh likes to deal with things. He likes to deal with them head on. He likes to deal with them by saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I dare you to mess with me on it. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. And maybe even what we've seen so far is more often it really kind of doesn't. It was a little bit grating to me other than I understand that it was still true to the character.
Yeah, but also going back to the one where he tells his entourage to leave the room, you felt like he just had these new congressmen who were naive and he had to let them know where they were, where their place was, right?
Right.
And he does a good job of doing that. I'm just saying, I like Josh.
Well, I mean, and one of the better, again, great dialogue in this series, one of the better lines, and I'm pretty sure it's an internet meme that's pretty popular, is, you know, I'm so sick of Congress, I could vomit. When they're in the mural room and the younger Chris Wick congressman that he talks about having, hey, I mean, that was a good interaction too. Whereas I don't like the way that he dealt with the older guy on the outside. I like the way he dealt with Chris Wick because it's, you know, you can see where his passions are. He talks about understanding that this is a hot issue, that I'm going to have to accept different kind of points of view. But then he kind of goes through and talks about, it's funny because he almost is driving home the fact that this is not a great bill because we had to make so many concessions, but it's what we had to do to get anything done. That's a theme that we've seen throughout the series, is that, you know, that's something about politics, is that there's so much compromise. It's almost like you feel like nobody's ever completely happy with what's going on.
That's a good compromise. Both parties leave upset. All right, one thing I wanted to bring up before we move on to the next segment is, what did you think about Leo coming in the next day after his wife has left and just coming into work, and they ask him specifically, like, how were the pearls? How was the violinist and stuff? And he just says everything was great, everything was fine. I felt like that was one of the worst ways to handle it.
Well, one of the worst ways to handle it, but I guess I can understand that you're embarrassed by it, right?
Yeah, but there's a better way to get by. You change the subject. You say, we'll talk about it later. What we're doing right now is more important. You do anything but to completely lie about something you know is going to come out. I mean, that's just not the way to go, Leo. You should know better.
The thing that's different about Leo from everybody else on the staff is that he's in charge. And so I think that he's going to be super sensitive to perceived weakness, and this is going to feel like a weakness. I also don't think he wants people feeling sorry for him. They do have a job to do. I agree with you. I don't think it's the best way, but I think he had no idea they were going to make such a big deal about it, right?
I think you got to anticipate that. I don't, that's just my view, especially since he made them so involved in asking them all the questions, what he should do and all that,
and showing the pearls and all that kind of stuff.
Everyone was privy, so you know it's out there on the table. When you come in that next day, you need to be ready to deflect and get moving and not just kick the can and know that it's just going to be worse later on. Obviously, I think that'll be addressed in later episodes. But
okay. Oh. All right, we're just continuing the theme of the character check-in. Toby, we didn't learn a whole lot more about Toby other than most of Toby's interactions comedic relief, right? I mean, the whole
right now, yeah,
the whole internet stock, especially that led into probably the funniest scene. I would say this, the funniest scene in this episode was the high president on both of his back pills. I enjoyed that very, very much. Nobody's immune. I mean, Allison Janney, who plays CJ, the press secretary, in the opening scene of the pilot has to do a slapstick fall off of a treadmill. I like the fact that even Martin Sheen, who's this very distinguished and well-known, you know, movie actor, we put him on drugs and make him, you know, not make any sense.
And he just kind of wanders in like, where am I?
Right.
And he's like slapping his hands like, yeah, I'm here to help. I'm gonna figure it out. It was good. It was well done.
It was. It was written very, very well. All right, so do you have anything else for Filibuster?
No, that's it for me.
Move us into the caucus.
All right, this is where we vote yay, nay, or abstain on the episode as a whole. And I will go ahead and abstain. I'm sitting out this one. There were some things that I didn't like. Just made me wonder. I don't understand the VP-president rivalry. I really didn't like the Jenny and Leo thing. We talked about that already.
Right.
I like the comedy. Yeah, I'm just sitting back on this one. I'm watching the next episode, but this gets an abstain for me.
That seems a little hardcore to me. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff that I understand that you don't understand the animosity between the VP and kind of the White House staff and all that kind of stuff, but I'm still interested to find out about it. I mean, definitely, I think that there were some good hooks that were landed there. The alcohol abuse, the attending the meetings, how is all this going to deal with? Is that something that's known, not known by the staff, by the public, all that kind of stuff?
The spouses who didn't recognize that their other spouse had responsibilities beyond just hanging out one night to have steak.
Because nobody in the history, you're right, nobody in the history of Earth has ever gone, you know what, this turned out to be more than I thought it was. I mean, could we possibly talk about me?
Sure, it's like being able to do something for my older brother, so I'll be happy to do that.
Right. Well, very touche. Very well. Very well, sir. Okay. But then also, the other thing that makes me want to be a yay on this is that, and you even said it, they introduced more comedy in this episode while still dealing with heavy situations like alcohol abuse, gun control, marriage problems, and still, this is the funniest episode we've gotten so far. Toby. Toby. Toby's line, every time Toby opened his mouth, it was a chuckle this time. And we didn't get more into his character, but it's still, everything fit. So I don't want to, you're just having a bad day or something. I don't know why you're abstaining here. So. I mean, I understand it's not a full nay. I personally
I've got three options here. I've got three options and I chose to abstain. All right.
Right. It's true. I guess you're right. I guess the gradation makes it tough. You got to do that sometime. We got an abstain from Dan. We got a yay from Mike. Obviously, I'm correct and he's not. That's going to pull us into our segment that is on the record. On the record, maybe you know or don't know, but I have been trying to insert quotes from the show into the conversation. And this is where Dan tries to catch and see if he caught where I did it. He got to throw a quote in where Sam says the older brother line that you just said. He says that to Toby when they're talking. So,
and when I heard it, I was like, that's one I have to try to get in.
Sure.
And I did force it, but that's what makes it fun. And I like that line too, because he acknowledges kind of that relationship of the mentor mentee. Even though we see Toby complain about the speech writing and all that, Sam, even though he's a screw up, still recognizes Toby's, you know, positive influence.
Right. So,
anyway, Michael, I know I got It Helps Not to Know Him.
Yes. Do you know when that's said in the episode?
I don't. You'll have to remind
me. Okay. It's funny because we talked about this scene a lot. When Josh is walking out to the motorcade and all those girls go crazy, CJ is behind him and she turns to the girls and looks at him and says, yeah, it helps not to know him. So okay. I thought that was a good line. Just it kind of recognizing this.
It is a good one. And then that might be all I have, because the other two, I'm not very confident that they were lines in the show. You said something about animal politics or animal, but that could have been conversation.
No, that was just conversational on my part. Yeah.
And then bad day. You don't have it written down. Like I said, I didn't have any confidence in those, but that's all I caught.
No. I did have a couple others, though. I did say I thought my work was outstanding.
And that was Toby?
Toby says that to the president when they're talking about the speech and everything. I said, could we possibly talk about me? Toby says that in the staff meeting when they're all talking about everything else. When they're all talking about Leo's, you know, pearls and the date and all that kind of stuff. His makeup of missing the anniversary, and Toby's trying to deal with this whole internet stock issue. He says that.
Right.
And then the president, when he's high on drugs, and they tell him what Toby did, he goes, Toby. And so I did that during the caucus.
Oh, I did miss that. But I do remember it. I do remember it in the episode.
Yeah. We also talk about lines that we just love. There were a lot of lines, I think, that were really good. When Leo says to Josh, he says, we got what we deserved. It was hubris, and we got what we deserved. Talking in the fact that Hoynes had to sweep in, and Hoynes got all the credit for getting the bill passed. I thought that was really good. I agree with you that the line of, in the meantime, don't tell me to be a leader of black, don't tell me how to be a leader of black men. You look like an idiot. That was just a great scene.
Oh, and he acknowledges later, Leo's like, yeah, I totally screwed up.
Even going back to the first series we watched with Sherlock, one of the things I appreciate with characters are when they don't try and gloss over their mistakes, but they just own up to them all the way. To me, it lends a realism, and we got to see that in Leo, even though he's like the, other than the president, he is the top dog, being willing to say, this was my mess up. I appreciate that very much. And then the other things, you don't even know the context. It's just a great line. It was in the president's speech when he says, only sons of bitches know how to lick a stamp. I thought, hey, that's pretty good line. I don't think there's any way I can work that into our conversation, but I'm going to write it down because it's a lot of fun. Any other lines or anything that you liked a lot from the episode?
No, not that haven't already been mentioned.
Okay, well, good stuff. Well, so this was a lot of fun. Our next episode is going to be over season 1, episode 5. See if Dan kind of can fix his attitude and have a little more fun. No, I'm just kidding. Again, we really appreciate you listening through this. Hope you're enjoying the West Wing season 1 like we are. This has been Rerun Retrospect, where we prove that hindsight is not always 20/20.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Rerun Retrospect. If you'd like to connect with us, you may email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @RerunRetrospect. We hope you'll join us for our next episode, where we keep pulling big ideas off the small screen.